All right, get ready, because today we're going deep into how Hindu myths have actually shaped the landscape of India.
It's pretty amazing how those stories, those myths, can turn the land itself into something sacred.
We've got some really interesting excerpts from books on Indian history and religion, even architecture.
Yeah, it's going to be like we're right there alongside those ancient pilgrims.
Definitely. So let's get started. One of the key concepts that comes up again and again is this idea of Tirtha.
Oh, Tirtha, a Sanskrit word, right.
Exactly. But it means so much more than just a word.
Right, it's not just like a river crossing or something,
Okay.
is it?
So help us unpack this. What makes a Tirtha so special?
Well, imagine a place where something incredible happened in those ancient myths, like where the veil between our world and the divine world, becomes thin.
Ah, okay. So a point of intersection.
Exactly, a place that's charged with that divine energy.
So we're talking about like a spot where a god might have taken a giant step.
Exactly. Or maybe a hero performed some crucial ritual. Think of the story of Vishnu's avatar, Trivikrama.
Oh, right. The dwarf who covered the whole cosmos in just three strides.
Yeah. No, picture that story, those three steps being linked to actual mountains or rivers. Suddenly, those places become sacred.
Wow, that's a powerful image. It's like the myth is literally imprinted onto the land itself. That's amazing.
And that's just one example, the Ramayana, for instance. That epic is full of these sacred locations. Rama's journey is marked by Tirthas all along the way.
So, like Chitrakoot and Panchavati.
Yeah, and even places like Ramagat in Ujjain, they're not just coordinates on a map, they're actual touch points to the divine.
Because of Rama's presence.
Precisely. And this is where the whole concept of pilgrimage comes in, yatra.
Right, that journey to these sacred sites.
It's more than just sightseeing. For Hindus, it's a deeply spiritual act, a way to connect with the divine.
By retracing the steps of these iconic figures, right? I mean, that's got to be a powerful experience.
Absolutely. And it's not just about the destination either. The journey itself is just as important.
It's like a physical, a physical embodiment of that spiritual quest.
Exactly. Think about it walking along the banks of the Ganges, stopping at each ghat where Rama might have performed ritual.
Wow, that's okay. Yeah, I'm starting to understand why these journeys are so powerful. It's like every step you take is filled with meaning, history, and I guess belief.
You got it. And speaking of tangible expressions of belief, let's not forget about architecture.
Right, the actual structures at these sacred sites,
Yeah.
they seem to play a huge role too.
Absolutely. And they've evolved over centuries. We're talking everything from those simple stupas containing relics
Oh, yeah.
to those incredibly elaborate temples with all those shrines and courtyards, and of course, those towering gateways, the
Oh,
Ryagopuram.
those are incredible. Those
Yeah.
massive, intricately carved gateways you see in so many pictures of South Indian temples.
Picture this. You're approaching a temple,
Huh?
and suddenly you're faced with this towering structure covered in carvings, gods, goddesses, scenes from mythology. It's meant to completely overwhelm your senses and transport you to another realm.
So the architecture itself becomes part of the storytelling.
Exactly. A visual expression of the myths, the grandeur, the complexity of it all. And this evolution in the architecture, well, it reflects a deeper evolution in beliefs, too. Take the Western Ghats, for example. Early Buddhists, they built those stupas to house relics.
Right, those physical reminders of the Buddha.
Yeah. But later on, they started creating these ornate images of the Buddha housed in viharas. It's a shift in their ritual focus.
Fascinating. So from veneration of relics to a more direct connection with the Buddha, it's incredible how these structures embody belief and faith and devotion in such a tangible way.
Absolutely. And let's not forget those towering gopurams in South India, like the ones at Hampi. Just awe-inspiring.
Yeah, from the Vijayanagara period.
It's a powerful statement of devotion and power, but it's important to remember that these sites, they're not frozen in time.
Oh, right. They've been constantly evolving for centuries.
Think of it like a living organism, constantly growing and changing.
So, what are some of the things that shaped that evolution?
Well, new stories get added, new rituals, architectural features, layer upon layer. But political power plays a huge role too.
Of course.
Kings and rulers, they'd patronize these temples, adding their own stamp on these sacred
It's
spaces.
a way to legitimize their rule, right?
Oh, absolutely. And to show off their piety, it's like a dialogue between the past and the present, the myths and the people who keep those myths alive. Like Emperor Akbar, he built that monumental gateway, the Bulan Darwaza, at Fatehpur Sikri.
Such a powerful symbol.
Yeah, and it wasn't just about architectural prowess, it symbolized his connection with the Chishti Sufi order.
And then there's Aurangzeb. He built the Badshahi Mosque in Lahore. What a statement. and it reflects his commitment to Islam.
Exactly. It's amazing how these rulers, even from different faiths, added their own contributions to this landscape of myth and meaning.
It shows that it's a living landscape, constantly being reshaped by belief, devotion, and history.
It truly is a tapestry woven from threads of myth, faith, and human experience.
Wow. Okay, I feel like we've only scratched the surface here. There's so much more to uncover about these sacred landscapes.
Absolutely. We've got a lot more ground to cover.
So, listener, stay with us. We're going to delve even deeper into this world of myth, geography, and belief. You won't want to miss it.
It's amazing to think about how these sacred sites become hubs for entire communities.
Yeah, you know, it's like the myths provide a blueprint for how to live.
A guide for how to connect with the divine.
Right, and to understand the world.
And it's not just about individual beliefs.
Oh, right, right.
These myths, these sacred landscapes, they play a role in shaping social structures, too.
Oh, yeah, you definitely see that with the caste system, right?
Exactly.
With Brahmins often associated with the most sacred rituals and sites.
The sources talk about how Brahmins were often given land.
Oh, interesting.
Especially fertile areas like Kerala, where they could establish agraharas.
Agraharas.
Settlements for Vedic learning.
Ah, so their social status was linked to their closeness to the divine.
Exactly. They were seen as intermediaries.
Between the earthly and the sacred.
Right. And this connection between land, power, and religion, it's woven through Indian history.
Yeah.
Kings would patronize temples.
Right.
Build mosques.
Even create new cities?
Yeah, to show their piety.
Yeah, to legitimize their rule.
It's a stage where faith and politics come together.
Like Akbar's Fatehpur Sikri.
Ah, perfect example.
A city designed to showcase his vision of a harmonious society.
Where different faiths could coexist.
A fusion of architecture, religion, and power.
Exactly.
And these cities often became centers of pilgrimage themselves.
Drawing people from all over.
So it makes you think about the impact of all those pilgrims.
Yeah.
Traveling those routes.
The economic impact must have been huge.
Did the sources mention anything about that?
They did.
Yeah.
The growth of those pilgrimage routes really fueled trade and commerce.
Oh, of course. All those travelers needed supplies.
Food, lodging.
It's amazing to think about.
That created bustling economic centers.
So these myths and landscapes have this ripple effect.
They influence social structures.
Economic activities.
It's this connection between the spiritual and the material.
And it's not just about the grand temples and cities, right?
No, not at all.
Even small features of the landscape can be sacred.
The sources talk about how even rivers, trees, even rocks can be tirthas.
Oh, wow.
As long as they're connected to a myth.
So like the Ganges River.
Perfect example.
It's considered the most sacred river in Hinduism.
And its source at Gangotri is believed to be the abode of the goddess Ganga herself.
And people make pilgrimages to bathe in its waters.
Yeah, they believe it washes away their sins.
It's incredible how the myths can transform the way people experience the natural world.
And this connection isn't limited to Hinduism either.
Oh, right. You see it in other Indian religions too.
Like Buddhism.
Think about those incredible cave temples in the Western Ghats.
Oh, yeah, those are amazing.
Carved right into the cliffs.
They're not just feats of engineering.
They're sacred spaces. They reflect the beliefs of the monks who live there.
The sources point out how these cave temples often shifted away from the emphasis on stupas.
Oh, like the Buddhist viharas.
Exactly.
So they focus more on images of the Buddha instead of relics.
It shows a change in how they connected with the divine.
More direct connection with the Buddha himself.
It's another example of how these sacred landscapes aren't static.
They evolve.
Right along with the beliefs of the people who create them.
It's a living tradition.
A dynamic interplay.
Between myth and belief.
And the physical world.
And that tradition is still so alive in India today.
Even with modernization and globalization.
Yeah, you see it in the pilgrimages, the festivals, the reverence for those sites.
It's inspiring.
It really is.
But we have to acknowledge the challenges these landscapes are facing.
Oh, absolutely. Pollution, urbanization, conflict.
They all threaten the integrity of these sites.
And their ability to sustain those ancient traditions.
It's a reminder that these sacred spaces aren't just remnants of the past.
They're living entities.
That need our protection.
So how do we ensure their survival? What's the key?
I think understanding their significance.
Appreciating that connection between myth, geography, human experience.
That's the first step.
Well said. I think we've done a great job unpacking this topic.
We've gone deep into Tirtha.
Explored the evolution of sacred landscapes.
Talked about the challenges they face.
And we've kept things engaging for our listeners.
But there's one more layer we need to explore.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
We've focused on specific sites, specific regions.
Right.
But we need to look at the bigger picture.
Okay, I'm listening.
The idea of India itself as a sacred geography.
The whole subcontinent.
Exactly.
So we've journeyed through myths etched onto mountains and walked along those sacred rivers.
We've marveled at those architectural wonders that bring these stories to life.
And now we're zooming out, looking at the bigger picture.
India as sacred geography.
It's a big concept, right? What does it actually mean to see the whole subcontinent like that?
It's about more than just a collection of individual sacred sites.
More than just dots on a map.
Right? Exactly. It's about seeing India, the entire landmass, as imbued with a spiritual resonance.
Like the land itself is considered sacred.
Yeah, in many ways. The sources describe how ancient texts, like the Puranas, refer to India as Bharata.
Yeah.
A land blessed by the gods.
Where the divine has appeared again and again throughout history.
Exactly.
And that belief must have shaped how people viewed the land over time.
Oh, absolutely. It instilled this deep sense of reverence for nature.
Like the Ganges and Yamuna rivers.
The Himalayas.
They're all seen as embodiments of divine power.
Right.
So the whole landscape becomes a canvas for spiritual experience.
Each place with a story to tell.
Each feature has a deeper meaning.
Beautiful way to put it.
Mm.
And the sense of interconnectedness of the sacred being everywhere, it still resonates with many Indians today.
It's powerful. But how does this idea of a sacred geography work in a modern, diverse society like India?
It's a complicated issue. You have this enduring reverence for sacred sites and the traditions they represent.
Millions of people still go on pilgrimages, celebrate festivals, take part in those rituals.
It connects them to their heritage.
Think about the Kumbh Mela.
Millions gather to bathe in those sacred rivers.
Wow.
It's both a spiritual event and a testament to the power of belief.
That's an amazing image.
But you mentioned tension. What are some of those challenges facing this idea of a sacred geography in modern India?
Well, we've talked about modernization.
Globalization.
Conflict.
These forces can put pressure on those traditions.
And on those sacred landscapes.
Right. Think about things like pollution.
Urbanization.
The rise of religious nationalism.
These can threaten those sacred sites.
And the values they represent.
So it's a balancing act, isn't it?
Trying to preserve those sacred spaces.
While adapting to the needs of a growing population.
It is. And this isn't just a challenge for India, by the way.
Oh, you see it in other cultures, too.
Many cultures are trying to figure out how to preserve their heritage in a rapidly changing world.
It makes you wonder, what will happen to these sacred landscapes in the future?
That's why it's so important to understand the power of these narratives.
Those myths that tie people to the land.
If people lose that connection.
These places just become tourist spots, right?
Right. Or historical relics.
Exactly.
It's about recognizing that deeper meaning.
The spiritual connection.
And finding ways to protect them for future generations.
It's been an incredible journey, exploring this tapestry of myth, landscape, and belief.
A fantastic deep dive.
For sure.
We've explored the concept of Tirtha.
The evolution of sacred landscapes.
The challenges they face.
And this idea of India as a sacred geography.
So listener, we want to leave you with a final thought.
We've talked about India as sacred geography.
But what about your own personal geography?
My own personal geography.
Are there places in your life, in your community, that hold special meaning for you?
A connection to something bigger.
Maybe a park you went to as a kid?
A hiking trail.
Or a peaceful spot in your home.
Those are some great examples.
Think about those places.
Explore them.
And appreciate what makes them unique.
Because those personal stories and experiences, those are important too.
Exactly.
The most profound journeys can begin right in our own backyards.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into India.
A land where myth and reality come together.
To create a truly sacred landscape.
Until next time, keep exploring.
Keep questioning.
Keep diving deep into the world of knowledge.
And wonder.